The Final Edition Radio Hour is a work of satire intended for people who own books, gentrify neighborhoods, and say they like kale. Please consume responsibly, the satire, that is.
Man on the street!
President Obama visited Kenya. The Final Edition asks the man on the street, what do you think?
I may be the first person to point this out, but he was born there.
Good. Now he can go cure the Ebola that he started.
I know one place Obama's not going to visit. Benghazi?
Oh, man. Tell him to go to this restaurant on King Street.
We should respect the president's desire to go visit Ubangi Bangi Land.
I kissed the wrong type of woman. Now I got a Ubangi on my lip.
There's a lot of black people in Africa, right?
Here's a pretty small country. At 5 p.m., they roll up their dirt.
Welcome to Election Coverage 2016. We're looking at all the most important issues in the upcoming presidential election, and we start with Donald Trump.
Donald Trump. Man, that guy'll say anything for attention.
So we put together everything he said for attention, and we're running a three-hour special tomorrow.
Which we're going to repeat.
Meantime, his anti-immigration rhetoric bumps heads with Jeb Bush, who's trying to tap the social conservatism of many immigrant voters.
That raises a central question about Jeb Bush. If you shrank a submarine to the size of a carbon molecule and injected it into Jeb Bush's bloodstream, how would it find its way out?
We'll explore that issue at the top of the hour.
As for Democrats, socialism doesn't seem to be a dirty word anymore, as Senator Bernie Sanders draws huge crowds.
The big question there, what would Bernie Sanders look like if you switched his hands and feet?
God, can you imagine? And what if his eyes were like 40% bigger?
Finally, the front runner, Hillary Clinton. Here's the big question about Hillary Rodham Clinton. You know the old TV show Heck Ramsey?
Heck Ramsey? Yeah, it was like a Sunday mystery movie in the 1970s. About a cowboy detective or something?
Yeah, that's it. You know Jack Webb was executive producer?
Really? Jack Webb? The Dragnet guy?
Yeah, Joe Friday.
Isn't that something?
We're going to open up the phone line so the listeners can call in with opinions that haven't been fact-checked. We have David from Westwood. David, what do you think is the most important issue in this election?
Caitlyn Jenner!
Great insight, David.
We'll be talking about that more on Election Coverage 2016. This portion of the Final Edition Radio Hour is sponsored by Zimbabwe Bob's Rare, Exotic, and Endangered Hunter's Paradise.
Hi there, folks. I'm Zimbabwe Bob, inviting you all to come down and check out Zimbabwe Bob's Rare, Exotic, and Endangered Hunter's Paradise.
It sounds like something out of a dream.
My prayers have been answered.
Hell, you're both right.
Yeah. Okay, I like that. Yeah.
We here at Zimbabwe Bob's Rare, Exotic, and Endangered Hunter's Paradise have every kind of animal you could ever hope to hunt.
Is there anything for the kids?
But of course, ma'am. We've got our exclusive children's petting zoo and strangling pit. Your little ones can frolic with baby seals, adorable baby goats, kitties, and puppies. When they're bored with that, they can choke the life out of them. We have staff photographers on hand to capture those precious little moments of your budding sociopath's first kill.
That does sound wonderful.
What about the rest of us?
Yeah, I don't have any kids.
Fret not, true sportsman. Zimbabwe Bob's Rare, Exotic, and Endangered Hunter Paradise have you covered. Ever wanted to kill something beautiful and rare?
Boy, have I ever.
Well, here at Zimbabwe Bob's Rare, Exotic, and Endangered Hunter's Paradise, we stock only the rarest and most endangered species on Earth.
Like what?
In our African section, you can hunt white rhinos, lions, baby giraffes.
Anything more exotic?
Well, for our Gold Club members, you can hunt an actual Kalahari Bushman.
You mean hunt with a Kalahari Bushman as a guide?
No, sir. You can hunt the actual human being. And afterwards, we'll skin and debone him for you. He'll be boxed up and ready for shipping by the end of your trip.
What if I accidentally shoot my game in a restricted area?
No worries there, ma'am. Here at Zimbabwe Bob's Rare, Exotic, and Endangered Hunter's Paradise, you never at fault. Isn't that right, Vigigigadadungdun?
That is correct, sir. The fault is completely mine. I should have known where the game area was at all times. Please forgive me.
Phew. Well,
That sure is a relief.
So whether you want to kill an endangered species or merely a local beloved celebrity animal, head on down to Zimbabwe Bob's rare, exotic, and endangered hunter's paradise.
And now back to the Final Edition Radio Hour.
And now from the White House, President Donald Trump.
My fellow Americans, I'm speaking to you tonight from the Oval Office because I'm president, despite all the lies that the media told about me for a solid year and a half. The media are such liars. They really are. They hate me because I won the election. I beat their precious darling. I beat Hillary. I shocked the hell out of them. But you know something? I wasn't the least bit surprised. I ran a hell of a campaign. Probably the greatest campaign anyone has ever run in the history of the United States. But that's not good enough for the media. It isn't. You know why? Because they don't think I'm presidential. Let's think about this. I'm not presidential, but Barack Obama was. Okay, the less said about that, the better. And by the way, I saw the condition the Obamas left the White House in when they moved out. I'm a landlord, and if it were up to me, they wouldn't get their security deposit back. What are you going to do? Live and learn, right? A disaster. A total disaster. Obamacare, give me a break. The reason I'm speaking to you tonight is everybody's bent out of shape over what I said to Putin. But I'm not taking it back. Let me tell you about this guy. Putin was in the KGB. He's a spook. Always was. Always will be. Putin is nothing but trouble. Everyone knows this. He's scaring Europe half to death, threatening people with nuclear annihilation. So they said to me, they begged me, they said, please, Mr. President, please help us. So I figure, what the hell? I'll give him a call. Putin answered the phone, and I said to him very nicely, good morning, Mr. Putin. I was respectful because I'm a nice guy, despite what Rachel Maddow thinks. And my right hand to God, Putin says, oh, it's you. Oh, it's you. What am I, chopped liver? Excuse me, pal. I'm president of the goddamn United States. So I said, listen, Mr. Putin, you may have an 80% popularity rating in Russia where everybody's drunk, but as far as I'm concerned, you're a psychopath and a very dangerous person. Now, why did I call the president of Russia a psychopath? I'll tell you why. I've worked in real estate most of my life, so I know a psychopath when I see one. But at this point, Putin's extremely annoyed with me because I've just called him a dangerous psychopath, which, by the way, he is, okay? So I'm trying to lighten the mood a little bit. So I said, hey, Vladimir, I saw a picture of your girlfriend, and she's very attractive. I can understand why you divorced your wife. I've been there. Now, there's an extremely awkward silence. Putin didn't get it. I'm thinking, ay, 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 not only is he a ruthless dictator, he's got absolutely no sense of humor. A total disaster. I'm not going to repeat what Putin said about me, but let me tell you, folks, he is not a nice guy. And I'm thinking this guy, this Putin, this is the best guy they could find to lead their country. I feel sorry for Russia. I mean, if you're going to have a ruthless dictator, at least get somebody who's smart. But no, he's stupid. He's so stupid, it's unbelievable. He's the stupidest dictator I have ever met, and I've spent most of my life in the real estate business. Anyway, long story short, we're at war now with Russia. Not my fault. Not my fault. Russia's fault.
Our president, Donald Trump, needs his makeup refreshed, and we'll continue his story momentarily.
Trade talks in the Trans-Pacific Partnership are causing tensions between the United States and Canada. The Final Edition asks the man on the street, what do you think?
As far as the Trans-Pacific Partnership, I don't care if he's a man or a woman.
I don't think we should talk to Canada again until they say they're sorry.
I once injured my Saskatoon.
I think one thing we should make sure with the TPP is that it's double ply.
Hey, let Canada get their own TPP.
When did Canada become Canada?
What's their natural resource? Ice.
Welcome to BBC World News Tonight. My name is Paxton Snoddy. This week, the world was shocked by the news of Cecil the Lion's tragic death. My guest, Jonathan Larson, was the last person to interview Cecil. Welcome to World News Tonight.
Thanks, Paxton. It's a sad day.
Yes, of course. Let's get right to it. What were the circumstances that led to your interview with Cecil?
Well, basically, I had a live chicken.
A live chicken?
Yeah, and a bucket of goat entrails. Brought him right out into the open with a live chicken, and then I clinched the deal with a bucket of goat guts. Pretty easy, really.
Do you think Cecil had a sense of his impending demise? What was his mood?
I can't really answer that, Paxton. I'll have to let the interview speak for itself, but I don't think he was too worried.
Can you set up the clip we're about to hear?
Yeah. I had just lured him out of his protected park enclosure just to do this interview.
Okay. Here's the clip.
Cecil, first I'd like to thank you for coming out of your protected park enclosure just to do this interview.
Ah, forget about it. Who can resist a bucket of goat guts, right?
So you're not worried about poachers and whatnot?
So you're not worried about poachers and whatnot?
Seriously, Cecil, don't you ever fear for your life?
Hell no. People love me. I'm Cecil the fucking Lion. Follow me? I'm a tourist attraction. I mean, look at this GPS collar. See?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no one's gonna fuck with that. If anybody does, it's a 200 Ungawa fine. And Ungawas do not grow on trees, my friend. Well, not anymore, since they cut all the Ungawa trees down. Hey, where's that goat gut bucket? Top me up, will you?
What's with the goat gut bucket? Is that really a lion delicacy?
No, I just do it to delight the tourists. Nothing more entertaining than a big lion mouth full of blood, right? Here, look at this.
I'm speaking with Jonathan Larson, who conducted this amazing interview with Cecil the Lion just days before his death. Wow, Jonathan. Did you get the sense that Cecil was being deliberately careless?
It went far beyond that. He was flippant in his disregard for personal safety. After a crowd of hunters formed, he did the unthinkable of provoking them with a terrible impression of Joseph Cotton from Citizen Kane.
Well, you don't know Charlie. Charlie thought by finishing that notice he could show me he was an honest man. He was always trying to prove something. Say, you wouldn't happen to have a cigar on you, would you? Some awful purdy nurses around here with the silly idea of keeping me alive. Hey, nurse! Nurse! What's that? Rosebud? Oh, that was Marion Davies' clitoris. Honest engine. Nurse! Oh, nurse!
Ow! What the fuck was that? Was that an arrow?
Get him!
Get the lion! Get the lion! Hurry, get the lion!
And that was the last I saw of him. I was so upset I had to go back to the hotel for a brisk rubdown.
That was Jonathan Larson speaking this very poignant interview conducted this June with Cecil the Lion. I've been Danny McPhee.
With luck, we'll be back with more of the Final Edition Radio Hour.
Pull up your pants, we're back! It's the Final Edition Radio Hour!
President Barack Obama will now deliver his 2015 State of the Union Address.
My fellow Americans, I come before you tonight with a series of proposals that I believe Americans need and support, and that will never, really, never get approved by Congress. Ever. First of all, America's young workforce needs to be trained. So I believe the first 2 years of community college should be free for all students who keep their grades up. It's a great idea, and I believe Congress will approve it, just as soon as U.S. Education Secretary Arne Duncan starts shitting moon rocks. Or how about raising taxes on the wealthy and cutting taxes on the middle class? Trickle-down economics never worked, and it's about time Congress admitted that and reversed that policy. And they will, right after I eat my own head. So, why didn't I propose this stuff 5 years ago? Well, because Congress wouldn't touch it then, just like Congress won't touch it now. So, why am I proposing it tonight? Well, that's simple. Fuck you. That's why. I am drunk. I am smoking pot again. Michelle and I are having sex in every room in the White House. I let Joe Biden put a trampoline in his office. I am just going to spend the next 2 years proposing the best ideas you've ever heard in your life. Then, when the Congress that you elected does absolutely nothing, I'm going to laugh in your stupid faces. Then I'm going to get in that big chair in the Oval Office and spin around like a kid till I throw up. I am so high right now. Any hooty hoo, I think I'm just going to take my shoes and socks off now, loosen my tie, maybe give John Boehner a little dance, see what he does. God bless you. God bless America. I don't believe in God. I never did. Fuck you.
My native North with thee, land of the noble free, my name I love.
Now on E! It's time for the chit-chat with special guest Martin Luther King.
Hiya, Martin. Welcome to the show. So tell us, how does it feel to have a holiday named after you?
Well, that's largely irrelevant compared to the ongoing struggle for civil rights in this country and all around the world.
Oh, come on. You got a holiday. That's really the dream, am I right?
Actually, the dream I had was a little different. You see, I had a dream.
Oh, that's so totes weird, because I had a dream one time, too.
Well, Christy, I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood.
Oh my God, my dream was about my brother too. He was buying this car that turned out to be made of donuts. Can you believe that?
Okay. Well, in my dream, down in Alabama, little black boys and girls will be able to join hands with little...
No way, because my dream was about hands, too. My brother was driving me to the mall to get a manicure, only I was late because the donut car was really slow.
Well, my dream was more of a vision, an ideal that we can all aspire to. A dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the...
How did I not remember that before? My brother was blue in the dream because he was a Smurf. But I didn't want to, like, discriminate, so we both ate a Chobani. So that's totally like a metaphor for civil rights, right?
No, that's enough! I did not fight racism just so you could eat Chobani with a Smurf in your dream. That was not what I meant at all. It's been over 50 years, and still the violence continues. When will we truly hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal?
You really believe that all men are created equal?
Yes.
All men? Like, literally all men? Like... Even Ryan Gosling?
Yes, even Ryan Gosling, whoever he is.
OMG, you don't know? Okay, seriously, just look at him. He is clearly way better than everybody else. I mean, just look, right, Martin? Like, those glistening pecs, right? Like, right?
Well, he is a mighty attractive gentleman. Maybe he is more equal than the rest of us.
You know it. And that's all the time we have for Chit Chat with Martin. But stick around, because coming up is the nightly news with an E! Special investigative report. Rihanna's hair, fashion or faux? What you need to know.
Darren is an ex-cop who shot an unarmed black teenager. George is a neighborhood vigilante who also shot an unarmed black teenager. Together, they're detectives. This fall, look out for Darren Wilson and George Zimmerman in Law & Order, Blame the Victims Unit.
Detectives, thank God you're here. My ex-husband is stalking me and he says he's going to kill me and himself.
That sounds like a mystery, all right. Let me ask you one question. Is your husband... an unarmed black teenager.
Good call, Darren. That's just what I was going to ask.
Thanks, George.
What? No, my husband is a middle-aged white guy from Estonia, and he has a lot of guns. He collects them.
Well, the Constitution requires it.
Look, there's no mystery. He's right out there in the parking lot with a gun.
I just can't see the suspect.
He's right at the window. That's him.
Yeah, I see the white guy with a gun, but I don't see a suspect.
Let me ask you one question. Is your husband an unarmed black teenager?
I already asked that.
Oh, right.
Oh, my my God, he's coming this way!
I'm just not seeing it.
Maybe the unarmed black teenager is hiding behind the angry white guy with a gun.
Yeah, unarmed black teens are tricky that way.
I love you, Carol!
Well, she's dead. And I guess the mystery died with her.
And this white guy with the gun is dead too.
Huh? Oh, where'd he come from?
I guess we'll never solve the mystery of the unarmed black teenager.
They don't like it when I roll my R's. Here if I do it more. Next on the final edition.
Okay, I think you should do one of these.
What?
I'm just...
You don't improvise, that you're telling me?
No, I can't improvise these. There's not enough substance to get my teeth into.
After these messages, the final edition radio hour will go to pi squared.
We will be right back after this.
Yeah, do something French. Imagine you're drinking wine.
I just did.
We'll be back to discuss on the final edition radio hour.
Okay, these are incomprehensible. That's enough.
We'll be back soon with more of the final edition
Radio Hour!
Welcome back. I'm Tony Hendra. I'm delighted now to be able to interview one of my favorite comedians and a very good friend, John Hubelsang.
Thank you, Tony. Very honored to be here. Thank you.
You and I have spoken a lot about being a Catholic comedian, and I'm very interested in this because I think this is one of the most interesting of the unique things about you.
Well, it's a pleasure because you're someone who has written so eloquently and sensibly about the faith with full command of intellect and sentiment, which is something that I reach for. I consider myself Catholic the way that a lot of... it's my asexual orientation. I don't know if the Pope would consider me Catholic, and I'm sure most Catholics wouldn't consider me Catholic, but I do consider myself Catholic the way non-practicing Jews consider themselves culturally Jewish. And given the amount of emotional time I've given the Holy Roman Empire in my life, I feel qualified to talk about it all I want.
Yeah, I mean, I think I agree with that. I can't say that I agree with almost anything that the Church has been doing for a long time. But nonetheless, it's more than a cultural thing, though. It seems to me it's also a way of looking at the world which goes a little deeper than the average non-religious person does, because you have kind of grappled at some point in your life as a Catholic with problems of good and evil and guilt and so forth.
Yeah.
And,
well, I don't kiss the ring. You know, I stopped kissing the ring a long time ago.
Yeah, me too. One of the things that always bothered me a little bit secretly, however vicious and, you know, nasty we got at the Lampoon, was whether I was actually hurting someone.
Yeah.
That charity as a virtue seems to be the first victim of a really committed comedian.
Charity as a virtue. I mean, well, I don't know. I'm actually a big fan of charity, and I think that if I had to defend the Catholic Church on anything, that would be the first area that would spring to mind. I think no one raises greater awareness of global poverty. I think when Pope Benedict, for all of his many flaws, came out and said that the nations of Earth have a responsibility to provide health care for their poorest citizens, regardless of their ability to pay, I thought, well, gee, that's actually Christian, not Christian.
Right.
And so, you know, I'll give him big knocks on the false piety. And, you know, I think Jesus laid it out pretty well in Matthew 6:5 of don't trust anybody praying in public. They just want to be seen. Which, you know, when you think about it, it's actually rather telling. Once I was in my teens when I really decoded that for myself. I was spending a lot of time down south and watching these televangelists just praying, mm-hmm. praying on TV with nothing between you and them but an 800 number for you to send your money, praying. And I thought, my God, you know, like, you talk about it and like, well, would you defecate on television? No. Well, why not? Well, it's personal. Well, what's more personal than talking to this God you believe in so deeply?
Yeah.
And so, you know, I developed a healthy distrust for that. And look, the Catholic Church has dug its own hole. I mean, married priests is the conservative point of view. You know, you get rid of all these sexual hang-ups, which don't come from Jesus. They come from parts of the Old Testament, and they come from Paul. Get that shit out of the way and allow married priests, allow women priests, get over the celibacy law, which was fully put into place in 1139 AD by Pope Innocent II, purely to keep priests from leaving wealth to children. So the church was greedy.
Right.
Not out of a sex hangup. It was just money. You get rid of all of this, and you'll see these cretins interfering with altar boys disappear.
Right.
In the meantime, you know, I had Bill Donahue on my TV show last year, and I got him to admit that the church had a moral responsibility to pick up a phone and call a cop. And that's the great sin of the last two popes. In many ways, this current pope is sort of like when they elected a former NBA superstar David Bing mayor of Detroit after Kwame left. It was like, well, here's the really nice guy that's going to be a beat change for us. You know, here's the positive face that will hopefully make you forget how corrupt and evil the last guy was.
Yeah. The thing about Francis, though, is that I have a nasty lurking suspicion that he's not actually going to move the rock very far.
See, I disagree. I think without even changing a single policy, he's already moved the rock pretty far.
Yes, but
doctrinally,
I mean,
he won't have a great legacy. But culturally,
yes. Well, culturally, I mean, he did very firmly say the door is closed on.
Yep.
On
he sucks on
the
women.
Celibacy. Yeah.
Sucks on celibacy. Sucks on women. None of those things come from Jesus. You know, when you read the Bible, as I know you have, you see that wherever Jesus went, there were these three women that were always there.
And 12 guys.
12 guys, three women. But I mean, Mary and Martha, the sisters of Lazarus, and Mary Magdalene, who at no point in the Bible is described as a prostitute. And they're the first people Jesus appears to after he comes back from the dead. A thinking person would say, it appears that Jesus had 15 apostles. But the men who wrote the Bible said, nah, 12 apostles, three groupies. And you're right. For all of the good things about Francis, and I like him, and I want him to have a good food taster. I don't want him to fly in any small aircraft.
Right.
You know, this is a guy who wouldn't let the Virgin Mary say Mass because of the ancient policy of no knob, no job.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
And, you know, that's an embarrassment.
Yeah.
It's a good thing the nuns are there to redeem the entire church because God knows the penises aren't doing
it. Yeah, I was one of the most interesting guests that you had on, what was it called, Viewpoint?
Viewpoint.
Viewpoint. It was just Simone Campbell. Right, but this, who is a great heroine of mine, I must say. She's especially the way she stood up to this visitation scandal that Benedict began.
That whole time was Benedict beating up on nuns. I mean,
yes,
they actually
absolutely
told nuns not to do yoga. They told nuns not to do Reiki healing. I mean, they told nuns to stop focusing on the shit Jesus talked about, like poverty and helping the sick, which Matthew 25 is just him laying out the whole deal.
Indeed.
And told them to focus more on the shit Jesus never mentioned, like abortion and gay people and birth control.
Right, right. Get back in the bedroom, in fact.
It's hard not to look on that as on a cultural level as just males controlling females' bodies, sexualities,
absolutely,
and using guilt and shame to control behavior.
We actually have a character on the final edition called Sister Mary Che. And Sister Mary Che is one of the little sisters of Noam Chomsky, which have their headquarters in Wellesley, and obviously, but one of her favorite things is the church is divided. She's this lovely little old lady who's very sort of sharp, and has two doctorates and stuff, you know, unlike Timothy Dolan. And one of her favorite things to say is that the church is divided into two classes of people: the hierarchy, Catholics with penises, and the lowerarchy, the ones who don't have penises.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
And, the nuns are, to me, the nuns are where the church is at. I mean, it's
I grew up around a lot of nuns. You know, I didn't go to a Catholic school, so I never have had the privilege of being beaten by one. But but my mother was a nun, and my mother went into the convent right out of high school. She grew up in the mountains of Virginia, and that was her way out of poverty. That was her way out of the life that she was in. She was the granddaughter of a prohibition bootlegger. And, you know, her way out was the convent put her through nursing school, sent her to New York, then sent her to Africa. Eventually, she came back and married my dad, who had been a Franciscan brother. He had grown up around a lot of gang activity in Flatbush, and, you know, he had family members get in trouble, and he joined the brothers, and they put him... Actually, a priest offered to put him through St. Francis Prep, and then he became a brother, and that got him his master's, and he used religion as a way to get out of poverty.
Right.
You know, de Tocqueville talked about how religion was the origin of democracy, because before religion throughout Europe, if you were born poor, you stayed poor your whole life. And religion was the first time ever culturally that a poor-born person could somehow rise in status and eminence to the level of nobleman. So, you know, back in 1831, Tocqueville was giving religion credit for beginning upward mobility. You know, so I grew up with her, and then both my parents quit. They made a vow to God that I would never happen, and they both quit. So I grew up with a really divided idea of religion, because due to religion, I'm not supposed to be here, but due to religion, I got to be here. So I accept all the contradiction, and I call out all the hypocrisy, but I like to shine a light on the positive aspects of it, because there are quite a few.
Yes.
You just don't see them on TV.
Right, right.
You see douchebags screaming at women outside clinics, and that passes for faith.
Right. I actually love that log line you have for your play. Was it a brother married a sister? And
oh, yes.
And later the child tweeted about it.
Yeah, NPR wrote that, but yes.
Right.
A brother married a sister. That was rather lurid sounding. But it
especially
did,
for NPR.
Yes, it did yield a lot of clicks. I'm glad I could bring that. Yeah, I got the incest jokes and I got the black jokes. You know, my father's a brother, my mother's a sister, and I'm the whitest man in this room. But, you know, growing up, it was very normal to me. I was 6 years old, and my mom showed me my grandmother down south was showing me family photos from before I was born, and I noticed in a lot of them my mom was dressed very differently. And, I just came to really think that, well, there's normal people who go to Mass all the time and observe all the holy days, and then there's everyone else, the majority of people.
Right, right.
And it took me a long time to decolonize my brain and get away from, from growing up in the cult I was raised in.
Yeah. That's a wonderful story, I must say.
Well, it's got all the good and the bad, you know?
Yeah.
And one of the good things I got from Christianity and from Jesus was that, you know, you take the good and the bad in people, and I try to take the good and the bad in societies and religions, and I don't want to be a fundamentalist just full of condemnation and fire and brimstone. I want to love people. I want to love the people that piss me off. And so that's something I carry from it. But at the same time, I think organized religion is an atheism factory in America.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the other things that I've noticed that you do too, but it was the sort of thing I had on some of my contemporaries in the comedy world, which is that you actually do know the Bible. I mean, you know the New Testament.
That's
the only way you can take on these religious lunatics.
Well, that was my thing. All my friends are atheists, and I respect all that. I believe in atheists. Some of the best Christians I know are atheists, and some of the most godless heathens I know are Christians. So, you know, we all know that. But, like, the only points of view we get in the media are atheism and douchebags screaming at women outside clinics. Sometimes that's how it feels. And when I was growing up, I had a lot of problems with religion, but I knew amazing people. My mom was a head nurse at a convent when I was a kid, a convent for her former order, mostly retired nuns. And I knew nuns who were, like, working with drug addicts and homeless runaways. And I knew amazing Southern conservative Christian people who were so charitable and kind. And I never saw them on TV. I saw Jerry Falwell.
Yeah.
I got to debate him on Bill Maher. In my late 20s, which was a big thrill. And,
oh, really? I didn't know
oh,
that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was fantastic. And I got to call him Pro Some Life to his face, because big death penalty fan, that one.
Yeah.
And I pointed out that Jesus never mentioned abortion. He was kind of specific about not murdering sinners. I was turned off to religion by what I saw on TV, but I was turned on to faith by the kindness I saw in my Christian, Muslim, Jewish, loved ones and friends and people I came into contact with. So I'm a big believer and respecter in personal faith, and a big distruster of unauthorized fan clubs of God.
In other words, organized religion.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I must say, the older I get, the less interested I am in any kind of religion that organizes itself. But I think that's less important than the fact that when you look out at the world, all religions are basically, all organized religions at least, are basically a conspiracy by men against women. And they're all oriented towards male superiority. And
But not all religious people are that.
No, exactly. But certainly that's the rule of Islam and the rule of.
But you can make the same arguments about academia, about business, about sports.
I mean,
culturally, our whole society is the.
But religion's supposed to be different.
And I'd like to see religion lead the way. I mean, religion, if it hadn't been for religion. We probably wouldn't have had so many people able to lie to themselves that slavery was okay for so many years. But if it hadn't been for religion, I think abolition would have come much, much later. If it hadn't been for religion, I think the civil rights advances would have come, possibly decades later.
Right.
It's having the guy in the collar and that moral authority for all the shaky ground it's built on, having that on one's side for a progressive moral cause. I mean, we're watching the dominoes fall now with LGBT rights. There's nothing you can use in the Bible to say that being gay is wrong. Nothing. You're going to quote Leviticus to me? You're going to say that you follow the laws of Leviticus? Then you have to murder gay people with stones when you see them. You know, homophobes, I don't know if you noticed, the gay guys have been working out. They're ready for you. So take your best shot. I mean, no one follows Leviticus. Jesus never said a thing about gay people. Paul in Romans is not talking about gay people. Timothy in Corinthians is not talking about consensual gay people. Sodom and Gomorrah is a story about public gang rape of angels, not about Elton John getting to marry who he wants and talk about it. So, you know, once I broke through that wall of bullshit and realized that, you know, the Bible can be used as a means of spiritual uplift as much as it could be used as a means of cultural condemnation. And just as the Bible was used, you know, the sons of Ham to justify slavery, the Bible was used to uplift slaves and give them hope and inspiration. So, you know, I the Bible's like, it's like Occupy Wall Street or the Tea Party or the Constitution. You know, you'll look into it and you'll see what you want to see.
Yes, indeed. As a Catholic who actually believed in the Bible sufficiently to study it,
I was very devoted.
You then are armed against in the very way that these people do not want you to be.
Absolutely, because most of them are just ignorant hypocrite pigs. Right. I mean, most of them are just horrible bastard people, and you know they really are. And it's like everyone
scum, dirt,
You've decided that you're on the side of God, you can't be wrong.
Right.
You know, and so if you've decided that you speak for God, and that you and God are lined up on all the issues, that means anyone disagreeing with you speaks for Satan. And you are not going to sit down with Satan and negotiate school curriculum or what the terms of marriage are in your society.
Right.
Because that's just evil. Any kind of compromise is evil. This is the notion of, you know, American exceptionalism or manifest destiny, which are fancy bullshit ways of saying, whatever, I do what I want. And I, who was it? Was it that said, I'm not going to remember, it wasn't Susan B. Anthony. Who was it who said that, you know, they find religion suspicious because God so often hates the same people you do. And so, you know, and that's the kind of thing that all the religions warn us about. But I realize that you can't fight those people by saying you're wrong, because they want that. They want to run back to their little cliques, and they want to say those evil heathens out there threw their feces at me, but I'm here amongst you good people, and we are a strong community. And, you know, that kind of pride, well, that's how brown shirts get sold in some societies.
Yes.
And so, you know, for me, it's much more, I'd much rather sit there with one of these fundamentalists and actually say, let's assume every part of your book is literally true. Now tell me why my government, based on liberty and freedom, needs to discriminate against same-sex couples. And using your holy book, let's assume there's no separation of church and state.
Right.
Let's say we should have a government based on Christian values. Well, that means taking care of the poor, taking care of the sick, being kind to people in prison, and not starting any kind of violence.
And doing that first.
And doing that first. It also means no death penalty.
Right.
It means not strict adherence to Old Testament laws, because the Pharisees went after Jesus because his followers were working on the Sabbath.
Absolutely.
And he shot right back at them and said, Leviticus says you have to stone disobedient kids. Do you guys do that? Jesus called the Pharisees themselves out on their hypocritical, pious bullshit for the same book that today's modern Pharisees are using to put gays in a corner. So, you know, Jesus was anti-conservative religion from the very beginning. I just did an event with Reza Aslan, and, you know, he's getting a lot of mileage out of showing people what a politically powerful revolutionary force Jesus was. He didn't get executed by the state because he didn't rock the boat enough. You know, the guy was a radical, and he'd be rejected by religion today.
You can hear John weekdays on the new Sirius XM Insight channel. Give it a listen. Well worth your time. Stay tuned. We'll be back right after this.
And now, some more of the Final Edition Radio Hour.
Tony, we gotta come up with a promo. Our listeners don't know enough about all the great stuff the Final Edition does. Even when we tell them, it's all this like blah 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 dot 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 www URL crap. No one gets what that is on radio. They just tune it out.
Well, I have the perfect way to hold their attention while we give them the goods. When I was at the National Lampoon in the 70s, our most famous cover had a cute mutt with a 38 Magnum to its head and the legend, "Buy this magazine or we'll shoot this dog."
yeah, I remember that, but how does that help us? It was a visual image for a magazine.
Meet Freckles.
Freckles? Oh, there, there. Good boy.
Yay!
What's the matter then?
Also, meet my 38 Magnum.
Jesus Christ, you have a gun? Don't wave that thing around here. Is that thing loaded?
Sure is. Hey, listeners to the Final Edition Radio Hour on Progressive Voices on TuneIn. If you don't stay tuned to this promo while Jeff gives you all the necessary info about our fabulous website and our fabulous YouTube channel and other fabulous stuff we do, I will shoot this dog.
Jesus, man, take the gun out of that defenseless animal's ear.
Give him a good, Jeff.
Oh, my God, poor Freckles. Okay, fine. Hey, listeners to the Final Edition Radio Hour, you want more of what we do, go to thefinaledition.com. Our radio airs on this network on Saturday, Sunday, and Monday at 8, as well as Wednesday at midnight. We've also got an album, we've got a Twitter feed, we've got a great YouTube channel, Facebook, everything you can want at thefinaledition.com.
Now, tell them to tap all that into their iPhones or leave themselves an audio memo.
No, I won't. I told them enough, Tony. I'm calling the SPCA.
Tell them, or the dog gets it. I'm cocking the gun right now.
Okay, listeners, please, write this down. Thefinaledition.com. Thefinaledition.com. Go there for everything you want from the Final Edition, or this crazy old British coot is going to plug old Freckles.
Okay, that wasn't so hard, was it? Come here, Freckles, you dumb old chum. Hey, get down! Get down! Get away from me! Get, you crazy!
Good job, Freckles!
Get him!
Sick him! Oh, yeah, this is Jeff Kreisler for the Final Edition Radio Hour on Progressive Voices on TuneIn. 8 p.m. Saturday, Sunday, and Monday nights. Midnight on Wednesday.
No, Freckles, put that thing down! You don't have opposable thumbs! No!
Street.
Barack Obama will be the first sitting president to visit a prison. The Final Edition asks the man on the street, what do you think?
I guess he gets nostalgic for all the weed he used to smoke.
Did you know that 50% of all presidents in prison are black?
I hope he brings me some cigarettes.
Figures he's already made John Boehner his bitch.
I don't think it's the first time. I mean, come on. Wasn't FDR married to Eleanor? If that's not prison, I don't know what is.
Well, it wouldn't be the first time Clinton spent a night in the box.
Wow, so black is the new orange.
We return to our president, Donald Trump's speech, as he outlines the subtle intricacies of U.S.-Russia relations.
So we're launching ICBM missiles at Russia. They should be striking Moscow in a few minutes. In the meantime, here's Putin's private phone number. He's going to hate me for this, but you know what? I don't care. Call Putin. Tell him he's a dangerous psycho. Why the hell not? First, you dial the code for Russia, which is 011. Then it's 7-499-555-6732. Try it. See what happens. The Pentagon tells me I have to get onto Air Force One right now. It's the only way I can be protected, you know, because I'm the president and I'm a very important person, whatever. So I told them, look, there's no way I'm getting on Air Force One while Russia's attacking my country. No way. I'd be a sitting duck on that thing. I'm getting on my own plane. You've seen it. It's a beautiful plane. Gold-plated everything. Cost me $100 million. So I'll save the taxpayers some money. That's the least I can do. Am I disappointed? Of course I am. I promised you I was going to make America great again, and believe me, I would have. I'm a very smart person. I went to the Wharton School of Business. Very hard school to get into. Very hard. Got very high marks there. Very high marks. Graduated. Wrote a best-selling book, The Art of the Deal. Okay, they're telling me I have to go. I have really, really, really enjoyed being president. Thank you, everybody, and good night.
This portion of the program was brought to you by Amalgamated Guns. Come over to Amalgamated Guns, your one-stop Glock store.
Welcome to Amalgamated Guns, mentally unbalanced person of interest.
Hi, I'm about to take a trip to Jupiter on a rocket ship I made out of bee pollen and old egg cartons. So naturally, I feel the urge to commit mayhem. How can I be sure this gun is not suitable for hunting or personal protection?
Well, that's easy.
It comes with its own time machine so you can travel back in time to settle old scores.
You mean I can finally assassinate Chester A. Arthur? I hate that asshole. He reformed civil service.
Come on over to Amalgamated Guns, your one-stop Glock store. We'll make your sickest dreams come true. But don't just take our word. Hear what the corpse of Charlton Heston has to say about it.
I'm cold. So cold.
Amalgamated Guns.
Texas Governor Greg Abbott declared a state of emergency today, making a statement from the governor's mansion.
At 8 a.m. yesterday morning, the United States federal government opened a post office at the corner of Barron Road and Victoria Avenue in College Station, Texas. This is an obvious invasion by the federal government of Texas. We are now under attack by Barack Hussein Obama. The federal government openly says it will ship letters and packages through this beachhead. They will also implant tax forms and put up wanted posters of some of Texas's proudest exemplars of Second Amendment rights. I have no choice but to call in the Texas National Guard before another post office can be opened.
People in Texas reacted to the news.
Well, hell, if you let them open up a post office, pretty soon the federal government's going to start controlling air traffic. Oh, they'll be printing our currency. They'll be taking over our military. You know, somebody ought to call the FBI on those guys.
This has been breaking news from the Final Edition.
We are members of the Los Angeles Police Department.
Our relations with the community are not at their best, and we know this.
So to work better with those we serve and protect, we are asking civilians to help us in our ongoing efforts to entrap innocent people.
We're not sure why the public doesn't trust us, and there's really no sense dwelling on it. The important thing is we all pull together for the common cause of putting a lot of you in jail for things you didn't do.
How can you help? Well, right now we have an entrapment program against Uber drivers. Undercover officers flag down Uber drivers and insist on getting a ride in defiance of cab regulations.
Officers practically force their way into the car. They say it's an emergency.
Then they arrest the driver for an off-the-books fare the driver didn't even want to take.
We are depriving Uber drivers and their families of a livelihood so we can get a little extra pay and maybe even make sergeant. It's tough work.
So when you see officers engaged in such activity, why not at least say thank you?
Believe me, that helps.
Oh, and don't film the arrest with your cell phone.
Entrapment is difficult work, and many times, despite our best efforts, innocent people go free.
So when you see an officer who's at least trying, let him know you appreciate the work he's doing.
And if you're an Uber driver, please give us a ride. It's an emergency.
Welcome to the Absurd Minute. I'm Juliana Forlano. Scientists found a planet they're calling Earth's twin, although it's not identical since it still has an ozone layer. It also doesn't have any people on it, which means that Earth must be the evil twin. Upon hearing that these two are twins, Hugh Hefner said he wants to arrange a date.
Ew, gross.
A Russian billionaire is donating $100 million to fund the search for intelligent alien life. Meanwhile, the Koch brothers are donating even more to fund all this unintelligent life we have right here at home.
And he would take the Israelis and basically march them to the door of the oven.
Oh, my God. Bernie Sanders reached out to the country Wednesday night, broadcasting via webcam at 7:30 p.m., or as most people his age normally call it, bedtime. Sanders is the oldest candidate running. How old is he? Well, he's up in I don't give a fuck, I'll be honest and say whatever I think category, which would be refreshing in a presidential candidate. Sanders has dominated social media with the hashtag #FeelTheBurn, which is also what happens when Sarah Palin tries to think.
Ow, it hurts.
Meanwhile, Donald Trump said if elected, he'd love to have Palin in his cabinet, although Palin isn't sure how she'd fit inside. Trump is taking a lot of harsh criticism as of late. His kids have recently publicly defended him, proving true the old adage that where there's a will, there's a way. Meanwhile, Ivana Trump said that she felt violated during sex with the Donald, adding that, hey, that thing in his pants, not exactly what she'd call a Trump Tower. President Obama appeared on The Daily Show last week, and he said, quote, we move the ball forward, which disqualifies him from ever coaching the New York Jets. They don't do that. Stewart has 1 week left on The Daily Show. Once he's gone, liberals will be looking to a new host to get their news, while conservatives will still be looking for Obama's birth certificate. President Obama said in an interview that if he ran again, he would win, while Chris Christie says that if he ever runs, you might want to call a medic. Christie's popularity in the polls is way down at the bottom, right next to his sense of decency. At a campaign stop, Hillary Clinton refused to state whether she was for the XL pipeline or not, saying she'd answer the question when she's president. So I guess we'll never know. A new report shows computers belonging to members of parliament searched for porn over 247,000 times last year. It seems these English gentlemen are suffering from more than just a stiff upper lip. North Korea says it has no interest in taking part in an Iran-style nuclear deal. However, they may go for one. That's Gangnam Style. Gangnam Style. That was the Absurd Minute. I'm Juliana Forlano. Find our full-length show at julianaforlano.com or follow us on Twitter at Juliana Forlano.
Welcome back to the Bob Scott Show. Substituting for Bob Scott is God.
Hello, line six.
Hello, Bob.
Bob is out. This is God.
Whatever. Where can I get some Foo Fighters tickets?
Oh, just mail me a request and I'll take care of it.
Great. I'll mail it right off. Where do I send it?
Send it anywhere. I'm omnipresent. Hi, you're on the air.
I never believed in you. I don't believe in you now, and I never will believe in you. Hey, my eyes, I can't see, I can't see!
Line two.
Is this God?
You got him.
Wow! The God?
With no others before me. What's up?
Oh, this is great to talk to you. I've waited my whole life to talk to God, and now here I am!
Well, here's your big chance. What have you wanted to ask?
So where's Bob?
We return after the break to the Bob Scott Show, hosted by God.
Well, that's our show. Thanks for listening to the Final Edition Radio Hour. The voices of the Final Edition are performed by Bruce Cherry, Jen Dodd, Jim Earle, Rob Gordon, Tony Hindra, Jeff Hendrick, Dan Vitale, Jeff Chrysler, Barry Lank, John Marshall, Abby Parker, Rachel Rauch, Steve Rosenfield, James Mount, Rob Miller, Kayla Merrill, Andrew Danish, Leslie Shapira, Anne Tuchel, and Darby Worley. Credit to our writers at the Final Edition Radio Hour, Bruce Cherry, Jen Dodd, Jim Earle, Rob Gordon, Tony Hindra, Jeff Hendrick, Abby Parker, Jeff Chrysler, John Marshall, Barry Lank, Leslie Shapira, Kurt Weitzman, Kate Knowles, Jeremy Rayburn, and Steve Rosenfield. The Final Edition is produced and directed by Tony Hindra and Jeff Chrysler, West Coast production by Barry Lank. Audio edited and engineered by Greg Russ and Andrew Hammond. The Final Edition Radio Hour is the property of the Final Edition LLC, copyright 2014.